and Answers begins right now.
You're tuned to Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. What is the message of the modern feminist movement? How did this message change so radically over its history? And what does the Bible say about feminism? Today on this episode of Evidence and Answers, Pat welcomes his guest, Kelly Duwallin, as they discuss radical feminism and provide a biblical critique of this ideology. Please note that due to our guest's current employment position, she has issued a disclaimer, which we will air at the beginning of today's broadcast. Now let's begin part one of this two-part interview.
Anything that I say is not representative of the U.S. military or the U.S. Air Force.
You're listening to Evidence and Answers, where we provide compelling evidence for faith and hope in Christ and biblical answers to the issues of today. The feminist movement actually had a biblical foundation when it began in the early 20th century, but it has since morphed into something very different. What is the message of the modern feminist movement? How did this message change so radically over its history? What does the Bible say about feminism? Well, to help us address this issue today is Kelly Duwallin. Kelly is a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy, and she presently serves as an active member in the United States Air Force. She has a Bachelor's of Science in History and is finishing her Master's of Divinity at the Pacific Rim Christian University with hopes of going into the mission field. So, Kelly, welcome to Evidence and Answers.
Thank you, Pat, for having me here.
Yes, Kelly is a fine student. Been able to teach in several of her classes, and she's done some work in this area of feminism. So, Kelly, just give us a brief history of the feminist movement. You talk about there are three distinct waves in this movement. So tell us about the first wave of feminism. How did it originally begin?
Absolutely. So it started in the early 20th century, and it was mixed in between the temperance and the abolitionist movements, which it advocated for women's rights in hope of societal betterment. The goal of this particular wave of feminism was to ensure that the dignity and the respect of women was equal across the board for men and women, that they would be actually valued in society instead of being oppressed by the current culture. Now, there are actually three waves of feminism, which we'll surely dive into later on.
Yes, but the first wave actually, I believe, is good and consistent with biblical teaching. I mean, it upheld the equality of women in nature, but upheld also that there are distinct genders, male and female, and that both have distinct roles. And that was upheld as well here in this first wave of the feminist movement.
Absolutely. So the first wave of feminism focused on equal treatment and voting rights and dignified treatments. While there were two different ways of arguing the maternal and egalitarian ways, they were really tackling the injustices that were happening to women. They were trying to raise up women in their separate roles within society. They were saying that women have a role and men have a role, and they are both equal in the fact that they both deserve respect and dignity. The maternal side of the argument was focusing on the unique roles as mothers and caregivers, and the egalitarian were still looking at the unique roles of mothers and caregivers, but they were looking at it as more just fellow humans. They were still looking after the biblical rights of acknowledging the differences between men and females within society and their physical characteristics as well.
Yeah, so there really was no looking down on a woman who wanted to stay home and raise her children. That wasn't seen as oppressive or anything. In fact, it was really dignified and really upheld as something really valuable.
Absolutely. And that was the point of getting women to the voting stands is that it brought a different perspective to the booth. It created a more holistic look at society, bringing those views there and allowing for the 19th Amendment of giving women the right to vote.
Yeah, so either way, I mean, if a woman wanted to work or if she wanted to stay at home and raise children, both were seen as dignified and highly respected choices made by the women.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. It was a dignified position to be at home and be in the workplace, being able to look at those as both successful or markers of success, whether you stayed home or in the workplace. There was no devaluing of either role.
Yes, and I think also seeing the man as the protector and provider and leader of his family, I mean, that was also upheld. There wasn't this idea that it's toxic, you know, this idea of toxic masculinity for a man to be a protector and provider and to, you know, be the one that leads his family.
Absolutely. I think that's a great segment into just the second and third wave of feminism, because in the first wave of feminism, it was really tackling the issues that they saw. There was no blame being set upon different parts of society. With the second wave of feminism occurring during the 1960s to the 1980s, really it started to shift into adding on to reproductive rights. It was also talking about self-determination and autonomy. And this area was also during the sexual revolution, where it was looked upon unfavorably and starting to be looked at unfavorably to be at home and that be your only marker of success. We see masculinity starting to be the oppressor and having them victimize women in the oppressive sense of, well, you can't give me what I need. I can be completely independent. And that is where we get into what we have now, which started in the 1980s, which again intertwines different topics like LGBTQ plus and reproductive rights, again turning that focus away from the actual what feminism used to be, where it was focused on let's raise up the women into a dignified position in society and respect in society of the markers of success are can be in the home and at the workplace. It does not have to be just in the workplace. You see some of the fallacies of this is that while we pushed self-autonomy of women, of just self in general, both men and women, you did not see men go into the household. There was not this switch. It actually put more pressure on women to have both a successful career at home and in the workplace. So it almost put two sets of success markers in a woman's ability to succeed, two pressure or price points essentially to reach. And if you didn't have a successful career in the workplace, then you're looked down upon in the home, which was not the original intent of feminism. It was to raise up and show the value of women at home and to give the value both to the men and women.
Yeah, the way I see it, I mean, put simply from things that I've read that you've written, is really is the second wave of feminism saw, you know, the role of mother having children as taking away the freedom of a woman. True free woman, you know, pursues her career just like a man does, and she has a choice if the women, if children or whatever are burden to getting to the top of that corporate ladder or whatever goal she may have, she can choose, you know, not to have children and abort and things. And then the third wave was really removing, you know, went further to remove the distinction between men and women, kind of saying whatever a man can do, a woman can do, kind of thing, and really removing that distinction of gender in that third wave. Is that a good summary, you think?
Absolutely, yes. I think that's an excellent summary, Pat. I think the second wave was really the start of that change that we saw into that third wave of feminism.
Yeah, and do you see a connection between the sexual revolution and this morphing of feminism and the rise of abortion and all of that? How do you see those ideologies kind of coming together?
So I do see a tie between all of them together. I think that there has been an attack on identity of true self, of how we define self-worth because of the removal of God as our foundation and what actually defines our identity. It moves into more of the moral relativism realm, where we have stopped accepting truth as truth and letting the world and a moving pendulum decide what truth is, versus looking deeper into what the terms mean, what the implications mean. When we're looking at the radical feminism movement, a lot of people are searching for, who am I? Who am I? LGBTQ continues adding letters. There is this fluidity of gender. And they keep saying, don't label us. But instead, they just keep adding more labels. And there is an unknown identity. I've met several people within my sphere that are searching for identity and purpose. And so when we're looking at the biblical side of the house, it's, let's look at who we are foundationally. And that is man and woman, of who we are made in the image of God, which we're told in the Bible. And it's women we are made. You look at Proverbs 31. We point to that all the time, of we are intelligent, we're beautiful, we take care of a home, and we have so many different examples throughout the Bible too, both Old Testament and New Testament, of strong women, prophets, prophetesses. We have leaders, we have women in the marketplace, we have people that supported Jesus in his ministry. And it's a cherry picking of how the Bible represents women and represents men as well in their identities. Because when we're looking at toxic masculinity, they always point to violence and oppressiveness, but that's not how God made men either. They are supposed to lead. They are supposed to be protective. They are supposed to be the head of the home. God does not condone oppressiveness and violence within relationships. And so when we're looking at feminism and all of the things that now have been tied in, it's really a search for identity in all of this. And we have to go back to the Bible of what is truth to be able to find our identity and our true identity, not what the rest of the world and the moving pendulum has for us.
Yeah, you know, if you reject God's truth, and that we're created in his image, if once you throw that out, then yeah, what do you base your identity on? I mean, really, there's really nothing out there. So what you said is really hits home. You know, I remember, as you know, before I came to Christ, that's something I struggled with. You know, who am I? What is my identity? Where is my value found in? And that's quite a struggle if once you reject biblical truth and that we're made in the image of God, and he describes gender and the roles that men and women have in society that he created. Now, before I go on, I just want to make clear to everyone that, you know, Kelly and I acknowledge there is a spectrum on this feminist. When we say feminist, there's a spectrum here. And of course, I think what you and I are speaking of, because we have to speak kind of in broad general terms here, we're the leftist or radical feminism is really what we are critiquing here. So, Kelly, there are several basic errors in feminist ideology. You mentioned a few, but what are some of the major errors that you identify?
Absolutely. So some of the errors are going to be, and again, thank you for pointing out the what specifically we're talking about. So when we're talking about the errors of this argument, it's, we spoke about some of them, of the fact that radical feminism talks about the current culture is that men are trying to control and dominate women, but there's a lot of emotional terms that are used within this movement, and we have to dig deep into the layers to really understand what those terms are and why they're using those terms. So those are kind of red herring type terms, like toxic masculinity. What are we talking about? What are the actual statistics of that toxic masculinity? We are not supporting violence or domestic violence towards any gender, man or female, but that is not what feminism really is. So it's a distraction, is that red herring. Then you have the part that biology should not define a person and is a disadvantage. So when we're looking at the biology of men and women, it's very complementary. It's the fact that we have to acknowledge the beauty of both differences. And so when people ask, well, what is a woman? What is a man? It's a straw man fallacy mm-hmm. when you're going into this, because you're looking at the XX and the XY chromosome. There has been several articles where scientists have acknowledged that there has not been enough research on the XX chromosome, the female woman chromosome. So how can you have all these arguments when there's not even data to support some of the claims? I was talking to a medical professional about, you know, how do you differentiate between the dosages that you give mm-hmm. on a man and a female? And they go, well, you know, we actually don't distinguish on that, but there is something innately that you know that something is off with a person that comes into your clinic if they are transgender. And it's a matter of looking at the science behind it, of when you're looking at genetic diseases, that there are diseases that will not come up in the XX chromosome DNA because of that second X. They won't manifest because that X protects the DNA from that disease. And a piece of what I was talking about with that medical professional was they are changing some of the care that they're doing to be able to make transgender people feel more comfortable in the clinics because they are embarrassed about having to explain and everything like that. But then I think about, okay, well, throughout my lifetime, I came from a doctor and a nurse as my parents, and they always talked about how people felt uncomfortable with healthcare. So why wouldn't we do that for all people in making sure that everyone felt comfortable in the clinics? And I know that gets off of topic, but and then we talk about the fact that traditional masculine domain of the workplace is more important than the private stereotypical feminine domain of the home. And this is where we're degrading the caretaker type roles, in the fact that men did not do a jump over to caretaker jobs when women were trying to fight for their roles and their dignity in the home and being acknowledged as successful. But it was that now women had to be on both platforms as success. They had to be both at home as a nurturer and be successful, be going to all the PTA meetings, and they had to be successful in the workplace.
Yeah. Radical feminism, we've really paid the price in the culture today. You can see, what are some of the consequences you see of this radical feminist ideology?
That is an excellent question. So a lot of it is in policy, in the fact that we have seen athletes claim feminism in sports today. I was just reading an article of the San Jose State allowing a transgender player to continue playing. You look at Riley Gaines with her having to give a medal away, even though they tied with Leah Thomas. And when you're talking the original feminism of trying to raise up women, giving dignity, and then you have transgender males within the athletics, women cannot compete with males at the same level. And the biology is different. The bone density is different. The muscle density is different. The testosterone levels, even 2 years after taking all of the testosterone suppressants and the hormone treatments, it still is higher than women. And so if you're looking at that, then instead of raising up women, you're then replacing women again with men. So that's a huge one that's in the news today. And then policies also on in schools where it's gender affirming treatments before puberty has even hit with children. The parents are not being told that the children are being given gender affirming treatment, but it is within the middle school age children that is the foundation of learning right from wrong. It is the foundation of learning genders and really the basic skills of what it means to be a functioning member of society. And so if they don't even know what genders are and they're just learning colors and numbers and math and just the basics of science, to add in all of these, well, you know, you have to decide at this point. And well, if you say this, then we're going to start this care. And then it can potentially be irreversible. When you look at some of those drugs, they're actually drugs that they use that are used for cancer patients as well. And they are many times irreversible.
Yeah. It's not uncommon. In fact, I was not long ago, I'm at a Christian camp. I mean, this ideology permeates throughout the church as well. I was at a camp, and one of the things I stated was that men and women are different, you know, and they're created different and designed by God, you know, to fulfill great and different roles. Man, I was called racist, chauvinist, you know, toxic, all of this. And I said, well, look, if I put a man and a woman up here on stage, can you see that they're different? And everyone in the audience said, no way, same. And I said, okay, if we took off their clothes, I had a naked man, naked woman in front of it, could you see that they're different? And this is a room filled with hundreds of Christians, pastors. They all said, no. And I said, okay, I can't. You guys aren't answering me honestly. I can't have a, you know, discuss this if you're not going to answer me honestly. And they came up to me and let me have it. They said, my cousin is a black belt in martial arts and, you know, she'll kick your butt. And I said, yes, she probably will. But all things being equal, first degree black belt against first degree black belt, the man has the advantage. I said, I've been in the martial arts for a long time and I can tell you, Purple belt, the man has the advantage. A woman has to be a high caliber black belt to really take down another black belt guy. The man always has the advantage. And this other guy came and said, my cousin is Nancy Lopez and she'll kick your butt all over the golf course. And I said, I'm sure Nancy Lopez would. But could Nancy Lopez compete on the PGA Tour with a man? And I said, I haven't seen a woman breakthrough. And he said, yes, they will. You'll see them. And I said, okay, so you're telling me PGA Tour, the NFL, the NBA, hockey, it's going to have 50% women, right? And they said, yes. And I said, okay, well, I look forward to seeing the day. We got 50% men and 50% women. I mean, that's how strongly they felt at a Christian camp. And now I think with this whole transgender thing, we're beginning to see, no, men and women are biologically different. And as Paul McHugh stated, the difference goes, you know, and as you stated, goes all the way down to our chromosomes. And I think one of the inconsistencies I see in the feminist movement, as you kind of alluded to here, you have these men now competing as women and just dominating the sport. And could be someday women's sports are gone. They're all dominated by these biological males competing as women. And where are the feminists? Where are they?
Absolutely.
Once again, we've run out of time. Thank you for joining us here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number is 483-0586, or you may email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit the subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Just log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.